Last week, we saw Jesus in Jerusalem at the temple discussing the resurrection of the dead with the Sadducees. In our text today from Luke 21, Jesus is still at the temple and he has continued teaching in the temple. In the narrative, we are still in the same day as last week. And remember, now that Jesus was in Jerusalem, his crucifixion was drawing nearer. It's in the very next chapter of Luke that Jesus is betrayed, arrested, and beaten. So the teaching we'll hear today was one of Jesus' last teachings before going to the cross. Luke 21, beginning in verse 5. Then as some spoke of the temple, how it was adorned with beautiful stones and donations, he said, "These things which you see, the days will come in which not one stone shall be left upon another that shall not be thrown down." Someone said, "Look how beautiful this temple is." And Jesus said, "The things you see will be thrown down," meaning destroyed. For the Jews in the first century, it would have been shocking to hear Jesus say this. The temple, the central place of worship and sacrifice, would be destroyed. This would have worried the Jews because the temple had been destroyed before by Nebuchadnezzar during the Babylonian captivity. The temple being destroyed again would not have been seen as a pleasant thing. Presumably, it meant that there would be a new attack on Jerusalem by invaders. So they asked him, "Teacher, when will these things be? And what sign will there be when these things are about to take place?" And Jesus went on to tell them what the signs would be. He warned of false messiahs and wars between nations. He warned of earthquakes and famines and signs from heaven. Now, a popular belief among many Christians is that these things are about the end of the world, the end of history as we know it, things that will happen just before the second coming of Jesus. But very clearly from the text, we know that the end Jesus was talking about was the end of the temple. The end of the temple, not the end of history. In Luke's account, nothing is said at all about the end of the age or the end of the world. It's all about the temple. So whatever he meant by false messiahs and wars and earthquakes and signs from heaven, he was talking about the lead up to the temple's destruction. One problem with viewing this as yet future is that there is no temple in Jerusalem anymore. They have to concoct a theory that a third temple will be built in Jerusalem, and that must be what Jesus was talking about. It's that temple that will be destroyed in the end. But there's no reason to think that from the biblical data. There is a third temple, but it is Jesus himself. He is the third temple. We do not expect there to be a new Jewish temple to be built in Jerusalem. Yahweh is not speaking to the Jews anymore to worship him in that way. The temple is Jesus. Jesus was talking about the temple that he was at in that moment. The one that someone had just said, "Look how beautiful this is," to suggest that Jesus began talking about another temple thousands of years into the future does not make good sense. You would think it would be misleading of Jesus to do that. Jesus was talking about the temple in the first century, and it was destroyed in their future in the year 70 by the Romans. So Jesus' prophecy was true, and we know it wasn't the end of history because here we are. Jesus hasn't returned yet. We're not in the resurrection yet. History as we know it has kept going. This means that the things Jesus warned of here have already happened. They occurred in between the time he said, in between the time he said it and the year 70, which was a span of approximately 40 years. If you are new to St. David's or visiting with us today, If you're unfamiliar with this position, it is known as partial preterism, which means that some of Jesus' prophecies were fulfilled in our past, but not all of them. We still believe in a future physical return, and we look for the resurrection of the dead. Please notice that as Jesus gave these prophecies, he was also giving instruction to his listeners. In verse 8, when false messiahs come, claiming to be me or claiming imminent doom, don't follow them. Don't listen to them. Or in verse 9, when you hear of wars, don't be terrified. Those things will happen. This was a very practical teaching of Jesus. He wasn't just telling them what would happen, but he was telling them what they should do or not do when it happens. When the false messiahs with the false messiahs in wars, he was saying, don't panic. Don't listen to the hysteria. Don't let that worry you. The teaching gets more practical and more personal in verse 12. He said, but before all these things, they will lay their hands on you and persecute you, delivering you up to the synagogues and prisons. You will be brought before kings and rulers for my name's sake. Jesus warned that the Christians would be delivered up to the synagogues, meaning the Jews, and that this would happen before the end, before the temple would fall. And this is another proof that Jesus was talking about the first century. You've got to think from the disciples' perspective. They had not been persecuted yet. Neither had Jesus. He would be shortly. He would be arrested and delivered to the authorities and killed. But that had not happened yet. This was a new thing that Jesus was warning them of. And we know that it started in the first century, shortly after Pentecost. That's what the book of Acts is all about. The early Christians were put in prison. They stood before kings, and some were killed, just as Jesus was. That all sounds pretty grim, but Jesus' instruction was the same as before. Don't panic. Don't panic, because it will turn out for you as an occasion for testimony. Therefore, settle it in your hearts not to meditate beforehand on what you will answer. For I will give you a mouth and wisdom which all your adversaries will not be able to contradict or resist. He said, when you're attacked, when you're being victimized by the enemy, don't worry. It is a great ministry opportunity. On the surface, that might not sound very comforting. But actually it was. Jesus was giving his disciples assurance that they would have victory. Even when persecuted, they would be victorious because they would be bearing witness of Jesus. Bearing witness of Jesus. That is the key to victory. We don't view persecution as a defeat. Paul says it is in our weakness that we are strong. Jesus promised to be with the disciples and to give them the words to speak. When standing before rulers, they weren't to worry about what to say. Jesus would give them the words, and they would not be refuted. They would not be able to be refuted. Jesus said the enemy would not be able to contradict the words of God. They might harm you, but they will not be able to refute you. In fact, that's often why they harm you. They can't prove you wrong, so what do? They resort to violence. That's what they did to Jesus, right? And we actually see this being fulfilled in Scripture. In Acts 4, John and Peter were thrown in jail and interrogated by the Sadducees, the priests, and the high priest. Peter preached to them, and afterwards it says, there was nothing they could say. There's nothing they could say. All they could do was threaten. In Acts 6, some Jews tried to argue with Stephen, but it says they could not stand up against the wisdom that the Spirit gave him as he spoke. All they could do was use force. They took him to the Sanhedrin, falsely accused him, and stoned him to death. In both of those cases, God gave them the words to say. And each time, the enemy could not contradict. Jesus' prophecies and his promises are true. Verse 16. You will be betrayed even by parents and brothers, relatives and friends, and they will put some of you to death. And you will be hated by all for my name's sake. But not a hair of your head shall be lost. By your patience, possess your souls. Here are some more prophecies of bad things. Family division, being hated, getting killed. But there was a promise of good things. Not a hair of your head will perish, and by patience you will gain your soul. This hair of your head language is used multiple times in Scripture, representing safety and security, of being taken care of. The point was like before, don't panic. Don't worry when these things happen. Your life will be saved if you endure with patience. Jesus gave dire warnings of what was to come, but he gave instruction. He gave promises. He gave comfort. Now, you might be wondering, how would they be safe and secure if Jesus said they would be killed? You'll be killed, but not a hair on your head will be lost. Those seem like contradictory statements. Well, Jesus wasn't saying that they would never die, all right? He affirmed that they would. Yet they would be preserved and they would gain their lives. How could that be possible? I think the answer is resurrection. Resurrection. Jesus didn't mention that here, but he was just talking about resurrection with the Sadducees, right? And we know what happened just a few days after this. Jesus died on the cross, but he was rescued from death by resurrection. Jesus' suffering is the model for our own suffering, and his victory of our victory. Our safety from death, therefore, must ultimately be by resurrection. That is the promise that Jesus gave his disciples, and it's what he promises to you. If you endure in the faith against all odds, even if people kill you, you will be safe. This is the paradox of the Christian faith, that by losing our lives, we save our lives. Even in death, we remain secure. Death is not the end for us. It will not have the final say. Your hairs will not perish because you will get your body back. That is our hope, and that is what we look forward to. The persecutions we face in this life pale in comparison to the eternal bodily life we will one day have. We need to pray for persecuted churches to remember that and to be comforted by it, that they wouldn't lose that hope. And neither should you lose it, even when your loved ones are sick and dying. Do not lose the hope of resurrection. Finally, in verse 20, Jesus said, "But when you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, then know that its desolation is near." Jesus now gave the final sign leading up to the temple's destruction, and the sign was Jerusalem being surrounded. When they saw Jerusalem surrounded, that meant the temple would be soon thrown down. An army would come, the Romans, and the city would be attacked. And all of this for Israel's judgment, for being unfaithful to Yahweh and for rejecting his Messiah. Persecutions would come, but the persecutors would not get away with it. Their judgment day would come. Their temple and their city would be destroyed. It was Jesus and his people, the Christians, who had the victory. They were the ones left standing in the new covenant. They were vindicated when the temple fell. How fitting is it that this was one of Jesus' last teachings before the cross? Very shortly, he would be the victim of persecution, and then it would begin for the disciples. These things would start to happen soon, and in his love, he instructed them. He didn't leave them to figure it out on their own or to be surprised by it. He hasn't left us on our own either. This passage has to do with things in our past, but that doesn't mean that it isn't applicable to us. It's applicable to us anytime we face persecutions or anytime hysteria surrounds us. There will be wars and earthquakes and scary things in the sky, perhaps. There will be false prophets claiming to know the exact date when Jesus will return. When you encounter those things, what do? Jesus says, don't panic. Don't listen to that stuff. Don't let it control you. Because we are not called to be people of fear and hysteria. Don't worry and don't be anxious. You are the victor, even if you're harmed. Harmed bodily, emotionally, financially, whatever. When you are victimized for Jesus' sake, you are the victor because you are bearing witness. You are bearing witness. And Jesus will vindicate you. The hairs on your head will not perish. Now, most of us in this room haven't faced major persecution for our faith, but there are little persecutions that can be quite common. Think of when Christians are mocked and ridiculed by celebrities or politicians, when you encounter hostility from an atheist, when Mormons and Jehovah's Witnesses come to your door to tell you that you belong to a corrupted church. Those are small forms of persecution that you might face. When you do, don't panic, because Jesus is with you. He will give you the words to say in that moment. He will give you a mouth and wisdom that they cannot contradict. That doesn't mean you'll convince them, but they won't be able to refute you. Sometimes Christians feel insecure about their ability to articulate the faith. They don't think they know enough or they haven't studied enough, and so they become timid. But you should never let timidness keep you from speaking up. Jesus promises to be with you and to give you the words. That should be a comfort to you. He will do the work through you. And in that sense, the pressure is off. Now, certainly, you should know the gospel and practice how to explain it to people. But we don't walk around with pre-written scripts for every occasion, do we? No. So you have to rely on Jesus' promise. Trust that he is with you and that he is equipping you. And don't panic. Bear witness with confidence. You function as a prophet whenever you speak the written words of God. Whether that's to your family and friends or to kings and presidents. When you face trials, Jesus will preserve you. He will keep you safe, and he will give you the words. He's promised that, and you must believe it. Your responsibility is to endure and to open your mouth.